You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. In these podcasts, we explore a huge range of crucial issues and exciting developments in the food industry with brilliant guests drawn from all areas of expertise. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a TV presenter and writer, and I specialize in food and science. This podcast is all about iCrop 2.0. Now, what is iCrop 2.0, I hear you ask? Well, we're joined by David Wilkinson, who leads PepsiCo's team of agronomy experts across Europe, and he oversees PepsiCo's sustainable farming program, and he's going to tell us all about it. Welcome, David. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Now, just before we dive into iCrop 2.0, we're all familiar with agriculture, but what is agronomy and what's the difference between the two?
Okay. I mean, I'm sure there's many definitions for this, but the way we look at it is agronomists really sort of work alongside farmers and really work to develop methods that will improve the use of soil, increase the production of food, and really, you know, help our farmers, or this is the way, you know, the way that we define it, is that really help our farmers grow better and more resilient crops without using quite so much of the inputs.
Now, I guess agronomy has been happening for hundreds, well, probably thousands of years, really, with incremental changes in agriculture. So the invention of the seed drill and all the sort of the different, the little changes that have happened. And it's all about improving yield, but other things as well?
For sure. I think, you know, maybe when precision agriculture or precision agronomy was originally initiated, or these topics were originally initiated a few years ago now, I think it was probably more around better, higher producing, higher yielding crops and practices to support this. I think what's happened in the last few years, and certainly as we work with our farms in our fields, is we try to take a slightly more holistic approach, and you know, we talk a little bit more around resilient crops, and also make sure that we're doing the right things for the environment and the countryside around us as well. So I think over the last few years, it's definitely broadened out a touch.
Well, which is quite exciting, really exciting times. Now, when we think about PepsiCo, we think about the manufacturer of food and drink products. So what's this all about? Can you explain the role of your team and how you work? What the crossover is with working with farmers?
Sure. So agricultural products really do lie at the heart of our portfolio, be they, you know, potatoes for our Walkers and our Lay's brands, or oats for our Quaker porridge. We buy an awful lot of these agricultural raw materials. And frankly, there's very little processing between the raw materials that we buy and the great products that our consumers want. So, you know, our role is to make sure that, you know, the raw materials of the agricultural crops are just as good as they can be, to ensure that the quality of our products are fantastic.
And what about the sustainability issue, which I think you've touched on already? Now, I mean, I just think it's very interesting that you don't just buy these crops and process them and make them into food. How is this sort of sustainable farming approach translated into your sustainable farming program? And can you just explain a little bit about it?
Sure. So I think, as I mentioned, or as you introduced me at the start, I work for our procurement team, and our procurement team is a little bit different than perhaps people might imagine. We've got quite a large team, and more than half of that team are trained agronomists, and we work alongside our farmers. So we work directly with our farmers to improve our crop quality and the way the crops are grown on our behalf. And really, as part of that, five years ago now, we started developing, and PepsiCo developed this on a global level, the Sustainable Farming Program. And really, it's a very holistic approach of how we should be, or how we should be looking to grow our crops and manage our farms. And we look across three broad pillars, because for us, sustainability is not just the environmental element, which of course is hugely important. We also consider the social and economic pillars of a farming operation, and make sure we have all of these elements working together in a complementary manner. And as part of the sustainable farming program, we've consulted with lots of people from academia, be they universities or you know, other NGOs, and we're sort of focusing on, we've actually got 134 individual elements of the program that we work with our farmers to make sure that we're doing the right things. And as I said, they can be how we grow our crops, environmental considerations, but also how we work together to ensure business sustainability, financial sustainability, and we're doing the right things for our constituents, such as the consumers, but also people who live in agricultural communities and work on farms. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of a flavour of quite the, you know, of a holistic approach that we try to take on this.
I think that makes sense. But could you, let's get a little bit more specific about this. Does this translate to messages that you send to your consumers, the people that buy your products? Do they know, do they care about these issues? And is that important?
Well, I'm an agricultural expert. I probably know less about, you know, the very latest consumer read, but our, you know, what I've been told and my understanding is these are subjects that more and more consumers are, you know, becoming aware of, paying attention to, and it is becoming, you know, increasingly more important. I think, you know, as I speak to people with it, both within our business and outside of our business, agricultural awareness, sustainability considerations, climate change, these are all topics that more and more people are aware of, and they actually come to ask me an awful lot more questions in these areas. So I do believe that it's becoming more and more important for our consumers to understand, you know, where our products come from, how our raw materials are produced, and that we are doing the right things for both the farmers, the environment, and ensuring that the, you know, the quality is maintained for our great products and the consumers who buy them at the end of the day.
Now you work with thousands of farmers across Europe. How do you implement the technology that you're using on such a large scale? I mean, it sounds like a mountain to climb to me. You're dealing with a very traditional sort of industry, or not industry, but agriculture. And is there sort of pushback from people, you know, where you know, history and culture and instinct has been such an important part of their lives?
Well, it's certainly a challenge, and I think the challenge is more more driven by the ambition of what we are trying to do. I have to say is, you know, I'm fortunate enough in my role to go and see many farmers and meet with them on their farms and discuss these topics at length. And I have to say, over 95% of all of the farmers I have met fundamentally want to do the right thing. They're as passionate about looking after their farms, making sure that they look after the land as much as anyone. So we receive a great reception, and what we work to do with the farmers, and really it's around collaboration. It's making sure that we can alleviate the some of the bureaucracy that may be perceived around capturing data, creating more change. We're really quite focused on what we want to do. We try and do this through aligning and communicating with all of the farmers that we're working with. And we try to do this in the most efficient way as possible, because we realize that farmers have a million jobs to do as they start to plan and work through their season. And we don't really want to add a huge amount of extra burden to their already busy lives.
I guess also, you know, we have this perception of farmers as being, you know, stuck in the mud and traditional. You know, they have been changing for hundreds, thousands of years. You know, they've had to adapt to so many different things. So maybe we should be a little bit more confident about them embracing technology. And so many of them are young. You know, I've met some amazing young farmers who are, you know, right at the forefront of it. So, yeah, maybe we should give them a little bit more credit, I guess.
I certainly think we should. And again, you're absolutely right to draw out, you know, some of the points around a lot of young farmers. You know, they've often been to agricultural school. They are very au fait with latest technology, be they smartphones or tablets, or, you know, all of those IT skills that you know, younger generation tend to be seem to be equipped with. However, it's not just the young generation. I see many of the older generation farmers absolutely embracing technology. Maybe it's because they've got children at home that are all, you know, already always stuck on their smartphone, and they also, you know, by default teach their parents, you know, how to operate and the power of the technology. So, you know, when I go and see all farms, it's not just the younger age farmers that are adopting this technology quickly. We see it across all of the generations, which is really exciting to see. And they all do it in different ways. Sometimes you see some of the older farmers that they're diligently taking notes from something that they've downloaded from the app. And then they're using paper to capture the data and then sending it in a slightly more manual way. Others are loading information and communicating direct with us via apps straight from the field. So people do it in slightly different ways, but it's just so encouraging to see when you go onto farms and you see farmers doing different things, looking more broadly at problems that they've frankly been faced with for generations, and when you start to see better results and improving yield and improving quality and the use of less fertilizers year over year, and you start to talk about those results with them, they invariably come and tell you what they've done. It's really, really rewarding.
Yeah. Now, your key focus is precision agriculture, and this brings us directly onto iCrop 2.0. Can you explain what precision agriculture is, and then let's move on and reveal what iCrop 2.0 is?
Okay, sure. So for us, precision agronomy is the process by which we use latest technology and insights from big data to help our farmers grow more and better crops whilst using less resources, and really to help us all minimize the environmental footprint of growing those crops.
And can you give us a practical example of that?
Sure. Well, coming back to the second part of the previous question is, we started down this road 10 years ago, or maybe even a little bit more than that, when we developed with Cambridge University something called our iCrop tool. And we used it on a lot of our research fields, where we were trialing new varieties. We wanted to see what were the best agronomy practices that supported the growth of those new varieties. And we were actually bringing that information to the farmers. So we started off using a little bit more technology to bring new varieties into our farms and telling them, this is how you can grow these varieties. That has changed over a number of, the last few years, with the advent of smartphones and apps, whereby what we do now, the latest generation of iCrop, is we have an app-based tool where the farmers can log in. They can very quickly mark where their fields are, and then we share data about how that crop is performing. So we started off capturing data about that crop, and this is quite detailed amounts of data. So for a typical field that we're recording in a more detailed way, we will actually capture 270 data points associated with that field. Some of it will be the variety, the location, the soil type, some of these more traditional agricultural features, if you like. But we also start to look at what chemicals we applied, when did we apply the fertilizers, what fertilizer did we apply, and we take this information back, and using some fairly interesting analytics, we start to be able to see what are the practices that really drive great quality, great yield, and where are the opportunities to improve. And we take that back to our farmers and share it with them as we start to plan for the next season. Maybe we discuss slightly different agronomy practices or regimes for certain varieties, looking for different ways of selecting land. But actually, what we've also done very recently is try to increase the two-way nature of information flows. So it's not just around storing data. We're now piloting irrigation scheduling tools via the iCrop app, such that the data actually goes to the farmers as to when he should irrigate, when he should not irrigate, or irrigation is not required. And again, in terms of a tangible example, We piloted this in Spain a couple of years ago across 40 of our largest potato fields, and we assessed the performance after the season, and we actually increased the amount of irrigation efficiency from 40% of the fields receiving the water at the right time to 92%. And actually that saved over 10% of water being applied. So these are some examples that we're also piloting a blight alert for our farms as well, such that the app takes a model from one of our university or academic institutions that we partner with. In this instance, it's Wageningen University. It takes information from their model. We look at the weather that the field has had and is likely to have in the coming few days, and we send an alert to the farmer saying, you know, this field is at high risk and a blight treatment is required in the next 1, 2, or 3 days. Mm-hmm. So we're starting to try to not just use the technology in a retrospective season review format, but also to try to provide in-season decision support to our farmers.
That is extraordinary. But I guess the usefulness of this is only as good as the quality of the data that's inputted. So just to make it really specific, are we looking at farmers going into the middle of the field, plotting a GPS coordinate and saying, this is the yield of this square meter of land?
It's heading that way. I don't think we're quite into the yield per square meter of land yet. Where we are is we use quite a lot of automation to input locations of field. Mm-hmm. So it's not all manual data entry. We can use some automation just by, you know, putting your finger mark on the map in Google Images or something like that, or Google Maps, you can start to see where your field is, and the system will automatically can automatically calculate the size of the field if the boundaries are very clearly evident. So we do some degree of, you know, it's in some ways it's automated rather than fully relying on farmers entering data. And to your specific question around how we monitor yield, at the moment we're still conducting quite old school yield digs with 3 repetitions across the field to calculate what those yields are. Mm. And invariably our agronomy teams help farmers do that because it is quite time consuming. But looking forward, we're looking at ways of better integrating crop yield models to actually reduce some of this manual intervention.
It's really interesting. I was filming on a rapeseed farm the other day, and the farmer kept on sort of saying, "Oh, look, there they are. There's people going over there plotting the yield and measuring the fields." It's become a common sight for a lot of farmers that, you know, you've got people wandering around the fields taking measurements. I think that's quite exciting, but very strange at the same time. Now, in terms of the sustainability benefits of the technology, you were talking about water use, and you've mentioned fertilizer use. Can you expand on that? What are the other sustainability benefits of iCrop 2.0?
Well, certainly we talk about water. We also, one of the key areas we're looking into is crop nutrition. So which fertilizers we use, what's the best way of applying the fertilizer, what is the best or what is the optimum amount of fertilizer that we can use. And I think one of the exciting things is the way that the technology can integrate many existing practices, but also provides the data against which you can then run the analytics and see what works better than other regimes. So, you know, we will look at farmers, and farmers have got their own views of how to apply fertilizer, what fertilizers, how much fertilizers, and we can start to, you know, we can make recommendations, but what we can also do is with the data, we can go back to the farm and say, look, you know, we look at your field, and then we look at these 8 or 10 neighboring fields, and they did some different things, and they yielded this different type of results. So maybe we should think about doing something different on your fields. So that's in the iterative discussion that can happen following some of the data is an example of some of the things that we can do. The other elements that we're getting quite excited about is considering again, you know, a slightly more broader perspective of what sustainability is. So looking at additional practices which really start to get us into the world of regenerative ag. So considering how we can optimize crop rotation. How do we use cover crops? Is there a better way of moving less soil, minimum till, that we can work with our farmers on to actually, you know, just to actually improve not just the yield and inputs, but actually start to support and give back to the soil and the fields and the environment and the countryside in which we're operating.
And so, just to be clear, the minimum till is, as I understand it, that's partly soil disruption, but also sort of release of carbon dioxide to the atmosphere. Is that right?
Correct. So we're looking to, you know, when you grow potatoes, for instance, there is quite a lot of soil moved around. We're looking at ways of minimizing that, consolidating the number of operations onto a single tractor pass, for instance. One of the things that, as you know, as we've started to think more slightly more broadly around some of our practices, is we're starting to use fertilizers and apply the fertilizers in the ridge as we form the ridge at planting of the potatoes. Mm-hmm. Rather than sending the truck out or the tractor out a second time to broadcast the fertilizer at planting. So we're looking at lots of different ways, and again, whilst it's a slightly tangential use of the data, we record the crops following these different interventions and new practices, and we're able to go back to farmers and say, look, actually we did this and the result was very positive. It saved 20% less fertilizer, or 25% less fertilizer was applied on the field. Mm. We think this is a good idea, and clearly when we're able to talk the details of what's really happened, it becomes a much easier discussion to have with the farmers, because like I said at the outset of this conversation, all farmers that are, or the vast majority of farmers that I have the pleasure to engage with really want to do better things in their fields.
Yeah. Okay. Now it's time for my reactionary regressive question for you. So you can throw this right back at me. Is there a danger of removing the farmers' skills and instincts from the whole process, and thereby changing? And I know we've talked about this, that incremental change has happened for thousands of years, but this is a big fundamental shift now. Is there a problem embedded in the idea of removing these skills and the potential of causing kind of social disruption because the old ways of doing things and farmers' skills and culture disintegrates a little bit?
It's a great question, and I'm sure I'm sure some people will follow the logic to that point. What I can say in my experience is, nothing will take the place of a farmer going into his fields or her fields and seeing what really is happening in practice.
Yeah.
I said earlier in the conversation that we capture something like 270 data points associated with a field. A farmer in a season probably makes thousands of individual decisions, far yes. more than yeah. what we're capturing today. So what we hope to do is provide tools that actually encourage the farmer to get into their fields, interact with their crops. And yes, we'll capture some elements and we'll work on some specific improvements around that data or that a specific practice. But actually, there is no substitute for getting out there and seeing what's really happening.
Mm. And I guess in a lot of these discussions, I've also been talking about the idea that, you know, increasing yield, who really benefits from that? Because presumably increased yield across the board means that the farm doesn't actually make any more money than the farm next door. But the reality is, what you're doing is you're increasing issues of sustainability and crop management as well. And so there is a benefit beyond just more. And that was my initial question, really, wasn't it? Is it just about yield?
The way we look at it, at this, is obviously, you know, the agricultural equation is based on how much it costs to cultivate a hectare or an acre of land and what you get out of doing that work. So, you know, the more efficient and the more yield you get from that field, so long as the practices are appropriate, the better, because you know you're reducing the impact of some of the cost inflation measures that we're all familiar with, and if we can work together as we try to do with the farmers and with academia, if we can work together to grow crops in a better way that give a more consistent higher yield to the farmers, that's got to be good for all of us, you know, not just the environment, not just our consumer who benefits from the same great quality products, but the farmer as well. He's able to sell more potatoes for every field that he's looking after.
And what's the feedback from farmers?
Well, the feedback from farmers is they're engaging with us. So coming back to the PepsiCo Sustainable Farming Program, we've rolled this out to all of our potato farmers, our oats farmers, and our corn farmers across the whole of Europe. They've all engaged. They've all they've passed the program. They've engaged with third-party accreditation people who come and make sure that they're doing what they say they're doing. And this engagement, I think, is great testament to the fact that, you know, they believe what we're trying to do.
Now, this is a slightly different question. This we're talking about big data and the next generation of farm technology, but does this add to the concept of traceability is there a kind of, can you sort of mark a crop of corn or maize and add that to the amount of data that's available if the public want to track their product back to its source?
Yes, I think it absolutely can, you know, it can and it will become the foundation for consumers learning and understanding where the raw materials came from. The iCrop system that we're using at the moment, we're talking about transferring data along the supply chain using QR codes such that you do get this automated traceability. So, and that's actually a really exciting element for me, is, you know, a consumer opening up a bag of Lay's chips and understanding and becoming to easily to understand where those potatoes were sourced from. You know, invariably it's going to be close to where, you know, where the consumers live. You know, we have factories all over Europe, and we look to source all of our agricultural raw materials in the local, you know, in the local area. So actually we're very excited about this, and we think that, you know, the data that we're capturing as part of iCrop is absolutely aligned with better traceability and bringing farmers closer to the products that we are actually selling.
So is it a kind of blockchain open ledger integration, you think, is a workable concept?
It's
using iCrop.
It's heading there. I, you know, when people start to talk about open ledgers, you know, I start to think about accounting and financials, and I don't think that's the way we would use it. But ultimately, we would be able to transfer data from different parts of the chain. So a farmer passing it along to a washing station, or a farmer passing it along to the factory, you can have that data transferred, such that it's all there, readily available, if somebody wants to investigate where the raw materials came from.
And seeing as we're in the future gazing phase, which is I know very dangerous because gazing at the future can leave egg on your face. But come on, what can we expect to see in the future, do you think?
I think we will start to see a lot more broad scale deployment of some of the things that we're already talking about today. So variable rate applications of fertilizers and chemicals, leveraging GPS technology on tractors, automatic data capturing and gathering from tractors.
Oh, yes. Now, that would shift a lot of the burden from farmers, I guess, wouldn't it?
Exactly, exactly. And also, a lot of this data, you know, can we capture a lot of this data from satellite imagery, weather forecasts? There's huge amounts of, I think, automation and accessibility to the technology. I think that's what we can look forward to seeing in the short to medium term.
And just my very last question for you, is there an iCrop 3.0 already in the works, and what might it contain?
I think we're continuously evolving the platform. You know, I've talked about irrigation scheduling, talked about blight monitoring and control. We want to do more of that. We want to increase some of the in-season support tools that we can provide our farmers. You know, I sometimes with my first cup of coffee in the morning and I flick on my iPhone and look at what the weather is, I'm thinking, God, I would love to be able to be confident that our farmers are opening up our iCrop app in their phone, seeing what the weather's going to be for the next 5 days, looking as to what they need to do in the, you know, the bottom field or the maize crop that they're growing in the north of Spain, and then deciding and using our technology, using the information to help make their lives a little bit more manageable. So yeah.
Sounds good. Also, it sounds really exciting as well. So it's a you know, from the podcast we've done, this is an area that I see so much potential from. So yeah, exciting to see the future. David Wilkinson, thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome. Could I just say one last thing?
Yeah,
I'm sure it's a relief to many of the listeners that we've not been talking about COVID. I just want to acknowledge just the standout fantastic work that I've experienced from our farmers, and I know all farmers in general, how they've had to work to implement very quickly all of the social distancing precautions, how we've had to move to technology, be it Zoom meetings, just to integrate and just to pass along information and work with all of our farmers, and the speed at which they've implemented all of this. I think I think it's just only right that I recognize and we thank the farmers for just a fantastic response to a completely unprecedented challenge. So my hat's off to them.
I think that's absolutely right. And you know, amongst the key workers, the people that grow and provide our food are clearly absolutely central to it.
Absolute heroes. Yes. Yeah. 100% agree.
Fantastic. You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast brought to you by Food Matters. You heard from David Wilkinson and me, Stephen Gates. Thank you very much for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from salmon farm sustainability to the circular food economy. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatters.co.uk. Goodbye. You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, please visit foodmatters.co.uk.